This is News in No Time at Gordon. On today's roundtable, Alito off the hot seat, and President Bush says the Gulf is on the rise. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more, E.R. Shipp, professor of journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication. John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy, joins us as well. They both join us from our New York bureau. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. I thank you all for sitting in with us today. One of the things we want to talk about is something we've been following the entire week, and that is the Alito testimony in front of the Senate judiciary hearings. Of course, trying to ascend to the Supreme Court. George Curry, let me start with you. Democrats now weighing the idea of the filibuster, though most believe that that will, in fact, not happen. Judge Alito's testimony ended yesterday, many would say, with a whimper and not a bang.
Yeah, it's very clear that he's going to be confirmed. And I don't think many of the Democrats questioning him did such a good job, by the way. I thought Ted Kennedy, for example, was awful. And so you heard more speeches than you heard questions. It's very clear, there's no doubt, that he is in the Scalia-Thomas mold, and that's where he's going to be. And that was very, very clear. I mean, he had to acknowledge that certain things like Brown v. The Board of Education was correctly decided, but he left the door open for Roe v. Wade and some other things. So I thought he was artful, skilled, and you almost say, why are we having these hearings?
And it didn't hurt that his wife cried on camera. Mm-hmm. It brought some kind of emotional thing to this stupid event, essentially. Because while the senators asked 700 questions, they didn't really get any answers. As George said, there were lots of speeches, but there wasn't much challenging of where Judge Alito is coming from. And he was very careful not to say anything that would provoke, perhaps, a more intellectual discussion.
John McWhorter, let me ask you this as relates to the hearing and expectation of. Some people suggest that we should demand of those nominees to know where, in fact, they would stand. When you hear a Clarence Thomas in 1991 suggest that he had no opinion of Roe v. Wade, it's a little hard to believe that anyone, particularly someone who is a lawyer and judge, would have no opinion whatsoever.
Who is black and from Georgia.
The issue here, however, is we have to remember if people in 1930 could see how obsessed we are with the issue of abortion. This is a certain obsession of ours. And even if Thomas or Alito somehow managed to get rid of Roe v. Wade, it would be a matter for the states to decide. And I think all evidence is that if the states did decide this, then we'd be right back to where we are today because of what the national consensus is. More to the point, I don't think that there's any evidence that Alito is in the mold of Thomas and Scalia from what we've seen. And most to the point, we've seen over and over again that, believe it or not, even right-wing people are capable, when they are on the bench, of making decisions just based on how they see the chips falling rather than being ideologues.
Let me take you back to my question, and that was the idea of, quote, demanding a little bit more in terms of being more forthcoming from all of these nominees, quite frankly.
But this man could be revulsed by the notion of a woman having an abortion and still get on the bench and be able to make decisions based on precedent and his position in the larger polity. And if he doesn't want to make himself red meat by saying what he probably feels around the kitchen table, then given our culture, isn't that absolutely predictable?
And the whole philosophy here is this whole thing of stare decisis. So most legal experts, and Alito among them, would say that what they are committed to is following precedent. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court, some people jokingly say, sets the precedent if they want to. But basically they're saying they're not going to take any strange leaps. And they're asking us to have faith with them. Now, we've had members of the Ku Klux Klan on the court who ruled in favor of, if you want to say it that way, civil rights litigation.
That is a very good point.
You know, so
yeah, but it's been a long time since it happened to Hugo Black, and I doubt that you see that now. I want to take issue earlier. That is absolutely, there's no question that Alito is in that same mode when you look at his record. In fact, there's an email story on that New York Times this morning, so I think there is a way. But to your earlier question, though, Ed, about why can't we get them to answer? You know, it's difficult because if they do have, that's a legitimate concern. If they have cases that are going to come before them, they don't want to put themselves on the records one way or the other. So they have that. But at the same time, in terms of their judicial philosophy, you can get at it around the edges, but they didn't touch it, put a hand on him. I mean, they really didn't.
All right. No. Well, obviously, we'll continue to watch what most people suggest will be inevitability, and that is the confirmation of Judge Alito. Let's move our attention to President Bush, who is making news on two fronts. One, that he says that he will welcome a congressional hearing investigation into domestic eavesdropping, that he suggests that this will be good for democracy, and that he believes just as long as we don't give any secrets away to the enemy, he believes that this open process is, in fact, the thing to do. The other issue that he's been talking about of late, he had a trip to the Gulf Coast, and he says that the Gulf is on the rise, that in fact this would be a good place to bring your family, and also it is a good place to hold a convention. Let's take a look at both of those, John McWhorter. A, do you think he's being a little Pollyanna in his view of the Gulf Coast?
Well, let's face it. He's not an articulate man. He's not somebody who has a great deal of depth of feeling. He doesn't read the paper. We've seen this. We've seen it over and over again. Frankly, if New Orleans were run by white people, I suspect, or more white people, I suspect that we'd be more interested in the failures on their part. Those people run that city as if it were some sort of little church meeting in a tiny, tiny town. And the problem is less with what kind of PR George Bush brings and his usual gaffes and his usual lack of feeling than the fact that what's going on there has so little to do with building that city back up for the people who were there and already suffering before the flood happened. The news is sad, and a lot of it is because of, unfortunately, the mayor. And I just imagine if he were a person who was not black and was not charming. I think we'd be more interested in criticizing him than we are. Bush is a sideshow in the story.
Who said he was charming? Anyway, we can't. He is black, but he's not charming. As people said a few days ago when there was a real town meeting where people were asked or were able to ask questions of officials about returning to their neighborhoods, which neighborhoods will be rebuilt, which neighborhoods will turn into marshland, etc. You got serious anger going on. You had people showing you how devastated their communities continue to be, and they had no way of knowing whether they can get insurance claims filed because they don't know whether the neighborhood's going to exist. And the next day, the president comes and says everything's hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm. I'm more interested
on the hunky. But anyway, it's
All right, you know we're going to get letters on that one. Come on, it's Friday. We got through the end of the week.
The president was totally off the mark. He only saw a district that was not harmed.
That just means that he didn't do a good show. It's just like the people arguing against Alito. There's so much histrionics as opposed to substance. I just am no longer surprised that George Bush is an articulate or
sensitive. But I won't take my family to New Orleans. I'll keep on. This is my question. Where is the water supply coming from that's supplying all this food in these food workers making all this wonderful food that the president tells us to come to New Orleans for when we're seeing all this devastation? So that's
well, it'll be interesting to see as Mardi Gras rolls around how the city, which is frankly gearing up for that in hopes of a boon of tourists coming, to see in fact how the city will be able to play out that. George, let me take you to the other story that I brought up, and that is whether or not President Bush in fact is looking forward to the investigation of domestic eavesdropping and whether he'll be able to get, after the end of the investigation, more sure footing around what, in fact, he did.
I'm not so sure that he's looking forward to it. He knows they're inevitable, so he's saying he might as well see it because it's going to happen anyway. He knows those hearings are going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And he's saying, oh, yeah, we can have them. It's good for democracy and all that. But it's not good for democracy when you already have a system set up and the president just bypasses that system and say, I'm going to allow the NSA to have warrantless searches on U.S. citizens. So he had no choice from a public posturing standpoint, but I don't think it's something he's enthusiastically supporting, but these hearings are necessary.
John, when you talk about hearings from the investigative committees in terms of Congress, they have historically sometimes had issue and problems with getting enough information from agencies like the NSA, the National Security Agency. In this instance, one has to believe that they're not going to be as forthcoming as I believe Congress would want them to be.
Yeah, it's true. It seems to be that with this particular issue, from all the information that I've seen, that it would have been possible for the Bush administration to get this kind of information without this kind of subverting of the law. It always strikes me that what interests me most is that if it's true that the Brooklyn Bridge was not blown up because of what they did, then I feel a certain kind of relief. However, it also seems true that they could have prevented the blowing up of the Brooklyn Bridge without all of this subterfuge. I don't know whether this was sloppy or whether this was a matter of evil conniving, and we just have to wait and see.
But we have to also put this in a context. Excuse me. We've had domestic spying going on for years, haven't we? And I think about that as we approach the King holiday, and there's a new book out about
Canons.
Dr. King's life. And towards the end of his life, he was really pursued by domestic spying, if you want to put it that way, the FBI. And so we've had this. It's not a shock that it goes on. It's infuriating that it goes on. And I frankly don't expect us to learn anything from these hearings. It will be more of an opportunity to posture, as we just saw with the Alito hearings.
All right. Let me turn our attention to an interesting phenomenon that frankly is seen and growing as we see the, quote, browning of America. But this is interesting because it pits two of the brown sectors, again, if you'll allow that analogy, against each other. The debate now is the future of the U Street corridor, and that is a neighborhood, a historically black neighborhood that's adjacent to Howard University that at one time had been called Black Broadway and was really a rival to the days of the Harlem Renaissance in terms of black intelligentsia and cultural life and the like. But now we're seeing a move to try to rename the corridor Little Ethiopia, because many Ethiopians have, in fact, bought stores and restored to a great degree and restaurants that area. And they believe that, in fact, they should be able to name that section of the community Little Ethiopia for all of what they brought. And what we are seeing now are African Americans in that neighborhood pushing back against this, George Curry. It's an interesting juxtaposition of two people that you would believe would walk hand in hand.
Well, I think this is some of the tension you have, particularly in black communities when you have immigrants coming in. I mean, but you have Chinatown here, you have Little Italy in Baltimore, and you have Little Ethiopia even in L.A. So having those communities within themselves is not unique. Here you got a black community saying, wait a minute, that shouldn't be no more of Little Ethiopia than it is, you know, Little Black America. So you have some natural tensions there. And part of it, you got to be candid about it, part of it is the ignorance of each group about the other's culture. And but somehow this has to be worked out. And,
proponents for Little Ethiopia, though, John McWhorter, have suggested that you had the opportunity to rebuild this neighborhood, to revitalize it, and you did not. We are doing so, and this is part of the recognition that we believe we should be afforded.
Yep, it's a rich issue, and what it comes down to is something very simple. We are often told by our wise folk that the reason that neighborhoods like that have often been such disasters when they were occupied by black Americans was because of deindustrialization or because housing projects were too tall or they put a highway through it. And then people come in, whether they're black or aquamarine or whatever, and they make the best of the worst. And I think it makes a lot of us uncomfortable because it shows that our sociology and our history are a little oversimplified. We just need to watch people like that and try to do more of what they do.
Well, you know, the Ethiopians. I love U Street and Ethiopian food, by the way. Ethiopians have this saying.
Soul food is better.
Well, we can get into that, too.
Beef stew.
Okay, I really don't want the letters you guys are getting ready
we're not
to give
gonna
us this
but
week.
The Ethiopians have a saying that essentially says they are more perfect than anybody else.
They
so there is kind of an arrogance that's involved, that God put somebody in the oven to bake them, and they turned. He
left
them
the right color,
out too soon, and they were white. And he put some others in, and they came out too burnt. And then the Ethiopians were just right.
Okay, but so everybody has a pride attitude, in their race, ER, and you can find that kind of attitude with almost any race.
That's what I'm saying.
Race,
but some of
you?
That attitude is involved in this. What I think of is really a silly argument, because I don't care whether it's called Little Ethiopia or U Street, or in Key West they got Bahama Village, and you go wherever. It doesn't matter. What they need to do is to sit down and talk about what the future of the neighborhood is economically and, more importantly, politically. And who cares what the name is? It's ultimately irrelevant, because in 20 more years, there may be another group that's the dominant restaurateurs of U Street, and they may want to call it by that name.
But George,
so I think we shouldn't get hung up on that.
What we're finding in many areas across the country, as you noted earlier, is that the just plain old, good old, tried and true African American community has fallen victim to the ills of the economic downturn of many of the industries they had been in, and they are finding that they cannot compete any longer and do not have the same power, i.e. the ability to, in fact, control the neighborhoods they've lived in for years.
But what you do, you see groups like this, though, and you see with the Chinese and other groups, that they find an area, in this case, restaurants. There are areas you can go and find a whole row of Ethiopian restaurants, as ER knows. They find areas of specialty. They find ways of being cooperative as a group,
yeah,
pooling their money, the kinds of things. And they come in, and they make an impact, and there are lessons to be learned from that.
All right. Well, hopefully.
But we should not fear is this kind of conspiracy theory that the government is somehow subsidizing everybody other than black people.
But the patient has to heal himself as well.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll leave it on that.
Physician.
And please, letters should go to John McWhorter and E.R. Shipp, please. John McWhorter, E.R. Shipp, George Curry, thanks so much. Greatly appreciate it.